Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's been eating like a Goliath since Thursday. I am Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And we've got a great show for you today, because we're going to get into some feedback here today. But we're really going to dive into this episode of Survivor at a very interesting point. We're going to talk with the winner of Survivor South Pacific, Sophie Clark, to break down everything that's going on. Had a really fun podcast on Friday with the queen of Survivor, the only two-time winner, Sandra Diaz-Twine, was my guest on Friday. And we got into everything people said. Really fun podcast with Sandra, and hope you guys enjoy that one. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, of course, the Survivor Know-It-Alls was over the past week on Wednesday night, but our exit interview is still yet to come. I'm going to speak with Dan Rengering coming up on Monday, so be on the lookout for that, of course. Then with the double episode coming, we'll have a second exit interview later on this week. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, today is also Cyber Monday. And so if you're going to be doing some online shopping, we greatly appreciate it when you consider using our associate link. It doesn't cost you any extra, and it does help support Rob's Podcast and RHAP and all of the shows that we produce. So if you are going to begin your Amazon shopping experience, you could use our link, amazon.com/shop/RHAP, or seek out the banners on robisawebsite.com. Before we get to Sophie, let me also thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at Blink Home Security. Blink is great because it is the ultra-affordable, 100% wire-free home security camera that runs on two AA batteries for up to 2 years, and because Blink cameras don't have any wires, they can be placed virtually anywhere, inside or out. Nicole and I got these set up at the house, and they're really great. We got one inside the house and one outside the house. The one outside is great for being able to see anything that's showing up on your doorstep when we're getting a delivery or a package, wherever we are, we're able to see exactly what's going on. And the camera inside the house is especially useful because I have some small children that are always running around and touching stuff and doing stuff that they're not supposed to be doing. So it's like having another set of eyes on them at all times. In fact, last week when Nicole was at work, my kids were sleeping, and I even set up my camera so I could see if anybody came out of their rooms when they're not supposed to be. They're great for all sorts of uses, whether it's keeping an eye on kids or even elderly relatives or pets, watching a vacation home, preventing a package theft, ensuring that you've got the proper package delivery, and much more. Endless uses when you check out a Blink home security system. You get instant alerts to your smartphone when activity is captured on your camera, and you'll know exactly what's going on in or outside of your home right as it happens. If you want to make sure your kids made it home safe from school, keep an eye on your pets. Blink does it all. From downloading the app to onboarding the sync module and adding your cameras, the entire process should only take 5 minutes or less. So to get yours, go to blink4home.com/robpodcast. That's blink, F-O-R, home.com/robpodcast. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring this person back with me onto the podcast. God knows how many appearances this has been now for Sophie Clark, but she is one of the best in terms of breaking down the game and showing us things that we weren't even paying attention to. Very excited. Please welcome back the winner of Survivor South Pacific, Sophie Clark. Sophie, how are you?
Woohoo. I'm great. That was too much of an introduction.
Too much hype?
This season is so confusing. Like, especially the last two votes have been just overwhelming.
Yeah.
But last night I went with my fiance to get souffles and talk Survivor.
Hold on. Did you bury the lead here that you're engaged?
Ah, I'm engaged. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know this.
You didn't know this?
Yeah. When did this happen?
This happened in the summer.
In the summer?
Yeah.
So right after I saw you at Steven's wedding?
Right after, exactly. Steven inspired me.
Okay.
So, or you inspired me. Yeah.
I inspired you or Bobby?
Bobby.
Okay.
Bobby proposed, got engaged in June on a sunrise hike. We woke up at like 2 a.m., actually sooner, I like 12. It was the longest day of the year. And so sunrise was super, super mm-hmm. early. And so we did a sunrise hike in Adirondacks, and then he proposed on the top. And the only downside was that he had not told my mother not to come. And she was like, oh, I'll go on a sunrise hike. That sounds great. So my mom was there. And so he proposed. And my answer was, I cannot believe you're doing this in front of my mother. We're going to talk about this later.
Yeah. How do you lose her?
Yeah. I called it interimly engaged. She didn't hear because it was very windy at the top and she was like a little ways away, but I was still a little pissed that he had done it in front of my mother. Mm-hmm. So we were interimly engaged for like a month. And then we became officially engaged at Coney Island. So yeah.
Wow. This is great. Sophie, congratulations.
Thank you. Although I might not be engaged anymore because when I was in Florida, it turns out like the heat swells your fingers. And my ring had been pretty loose in the winter because in New York, it was so cold that I moved it onto another finger. Mm-hmm. And then I got to Florida and I fell asleep. And the next morning, my fingers were so big from the humidity and it was cutting off my circulation. And so I like held my hand over my head and I dumped it in a bucket of Vaseline. And there's some kind of like technique with floss and nothing worked. So I ended up having to cut my engagement ring off. So it's been a wild ride already.
You have to cut it off. Yeah. The picture of you that's on Instagram with your hand over your head, is that from you trying to get the swelling to go down on your, that I couldn't figure out what you were doing?
Yeah. Yeah. / practicing for Survivor, but mostly swelling going down, hoping the blood would go down my hand.
Oh my God. So, yeah. So you've been through a lot, Sophie.
I've been through a lot. But the reason I was saying this back to my fiance, so my fiance and I went to get souffles last night because I was like, oh my God, I have to talk Survivor tomorrow. I don't even know if I could describe what happened in the last 2 weeks. And so literally step one was just trying to remember everybody's names that's still in. It's very complicated what's been happening.
It's really complicated. And that's why I feel like this was the perfect time to talk to you about this stuff, because I feel like that I know I need some hand holding on this stuff, because, you know, there's been so many times where you've caught something. I remember we spoke during Kagyan, which, believe it or not, is almost 10 seasons ago. And you said, I mean, Steven and I were saying, Tony, this guy is crazy, doesn't know what he's doing. You said, no, watch this guy. He's like a shark. He's got to keep moving. Yeah, and I'm sure there's like, you know, 10 other examples that we can come up with of different things that you were the first to pick up on. So we have all of this craziness, and you're you know, really into the season. I don't want to put words in your mouth, right?
Oh my God, I love the season.
Okay, good.
Seriously though, what you do rankings all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, what was the best season?
Some people say rankings are arbitrary and reductive.
Well, I would tend to agree with the winner rankings only because I don't go very high, but I think season rankings are very accurate.
Well, I really feel like that the season rankings, when we do them, it's a tough exercise to do, but I think that what sort of gets lost is that people look at it too much from, like, you know, the overall view of like, oh, well, it was a good winner and there was, you know, this moment and this moment. But I think that what gets overlooked in the season rankings is on the week to week, like, it's like if you like watched a season of television, it's like, oh, okay, well, that season had a great cliffhanger at the end. It's like, well, if every episode along the way was boring, then it's not a great season of television. And this really has had, you know, so many twists and turns and not too many episodes, but if any, where you say, okay, well, nothing really happened this time.
I was waiting for it. Like, I just kept imagining, oh, well, the pre-jury is going to be great. And now, like, let's get in, you know, let's settle into the pagonging for the next 5 episodes. And it just never happens, which is awesome.
So far, so good.
Were they, like, every week exactly, they rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. And then they just add up the numbers at the end of the season. I'm sure there'd be some, like, unusual seasons that you wouldn't think of that would rank really high.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, slow and steady and do a good job.
Okay. Well, that's a project for another time. But if somebody wants to jump on that, I'll put you in touch with Sophie so you can project manage that, okay?
Maybe I'll have my fiance do it. I've been not forcing him. He's very obsessed with Survivor now, and he's been watching a lot of old seasons.
Yeah.
I've been having so much fun because, like, I'll choose the season. So I had him watch Pearl Islands recently. I finally had him watch Samoa, which was depressing. But it's fun for me too, because I like...
Why was it depressing? Because you wanted Russell to win?
Because Russell and that awful Bobby John guy, like, everybody... Yeah. Not Bobby John. Is it Bobby? No, what's his name?
I know who you're talking about. Ben Browning, the outlaw.
So many awful people on that season. Like, it's nasty. And compare, like, I just like good game players that also know where to draw the line between the game and life.
Mm-hmm.
And the people on that season, like there were no lines, yeah. right? It was, oh, it was terrible. yeah.
All right. Well, let's not go too far off the beaten path here with this, because we have to talk about what's going on here with this episode. And, you know, I have specific things that I want to get your take on. But do you have any sort of like big picture stuff that you want to get off your chest?
Oh, my God. Big picture stuff. Let's just dive right into the, I don't have any big pictures of it. I mean, the season's great. Mm-hmm. The big question for me is like, I think a lot of people, besides the edit, which I try to not really get into this whole like OTTNP whatever thing, right. a lot of people left who can win the game. Like, mm-hmm. Usually you look at people who are left and you think, well, nobody's going to vote for these five people and nobody's going to let this person go to the end. So like, these are the two potential winners. And I was running the list today and like, I think almost everybody can win the game. I mean, minus, I would say, Angelina. I think Angelina totally screwed her shot with the jury pandering. Like, that, like the minute Allison said, well, she was pandering for jury votes, like, I think she was done. Mm-hmm. But everybody else, I think, can, like, has a clear shot to winning the game.
Yeah, I think it is a wild season in that regard, that there's so many different potential people that could take it home. And most of them, I think that are, if I had to pick, that I feel like that the Goliaths, if I was going to rank them, are probably 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of people that I feel like have the best shot at it. But there's a lot of the Goliaths that if they end up there at the end, they could be people to mess with. I want to know from you, and I've watched the episode a few times now, and what I still don't understand is that on the Goliaths that you had in Kara and Alec and Allison, I don't know if they were in on this plan, if they were part of a vote split, if they panicked when the advantages came out and then decided, oh, okay, let's put our votes on Angelina. If when Dan was asked Kara, hey, should I play my idol on Allison? She whispered to him what she said back to him. What do you think is going on here with these three players who were talking about potentially jumping ship to the Goliaths?
Rob, I was planning to ask you this question. Don't you talk to people? I thought you would have the answer to this. I mean, my assumption has been that they changed at the last minute. Because I don't see a reason for them to leave Mike out of this in a like planned event. I think splitting the votes was not a thing that would like actually work. I don't think they believed that the Davids believed them, that they were voting with them, given the number of times that they had like pulled the sheet out from under them already. Which seems like the only logical conclusion is that at the last minute, they were like, shit, we need to prove our loyalty and prove that we're not Goliath strong, and voted for Angelina. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my guess. But do you agree? Or?
I think you're right, because that I went back and I was really looking at this at the tribal council. And then at the point where the vote steal gets played, that you see there's a bunch of shots of Alec looking at Angelina, Angelina looking at Kara, like they look like those three especially looked panicked. And I can understand why Allison, because her vote got stolen, why she would be especially upset. But there's a lot of like looking back and forth. What are we doing? Nick seemed so upset with those guys. He said that they're idiots, that he seemed very indignant at the tribal council, and it didn't feel like that was a person talking who was working on a split vote with people from the Goliaths, unless the whole thing was to try to hide it. But even in his interview that he did with Josh Wigler, he didn't make it sound like, okay, we actually had this big greater plan going on with a couple of people from the Goliaths, and then it was all a ruse just to blindside Dan and or Angelina.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is that Davids told the Goliaths, hey, we're voting for Angelina before. That way, like, just in case whoever did play the idol, like, didn't play it for Angelina. Not that it would matter in the end, right? Because they split the votes anyways. Mm-hmm. But, like, imagine they didn't pull Angelina out of, like, their ass at the last minute. I assume that was the name that the Davids had claimed was floating around in the beginning.
Well, I wonder if the vote split was, okay, we'll vote for Dan and you guys vote for Angelina in terms of the plan. But then the Goliaths weren't going to go through with that plan. But then when they saw that the Davids had something up their sleeve, they acted like, oh, no, what are you guys talking about? We were with you the whole time.
Yeah. I love that. I love that, like, the amount of power the Davids managed to, like, summon during the tribal council to force these, like, Goliaths into, like, doing their bidding and, like, turning on each other, like, in that moment. Like, usually I feel like turning on somebody happens quite slowly in Survivor, or, like, you know that it's coming, right? Like, you know, oh, a rock draw might come and I might have to turn. But this idea that, like, you would actually change, like, force somebody to turn on their ally in tribal council that they were not planning on doing is crazy. Mm-hmm. Never before. Yeah. I gotta say, like, I'm usually one to complain about too many advantages. I think that given this is the direction where Survivor's going, I prefer the different advantages to an onslaught of idols.
Yeah.
I think that's more interesting. I think it's made some great TV. I mean, the scene where all the Davids are, like, sharing the different powers they have is absolutely incredible. And I think we all have to acknowledge that it totally changes the game, right? It's not the Survivor of 20 years ago, but that's fine. Like, you sign up for a different game. And even if you sign up for a game where you don't know a nullifier is in effect, you know that it's a game where there could be such a thing as a nullifier and you wouldn't know about it. So I think that we've almost, like, crossed into this new age of, like, almost expect the unexpected, Big Brother, like, where you can't even complain about this stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it was when it was on the line where it felt not okay. And now we've gone into,
it's in the rearview mirror. All right. So I want to ask you some stuff about the idol nullifier. Cause this is I got this question from a few different listeners that they wanted us to talk about this in terms of the idol nullifier. Yes, it worked, but should it automatically come back? Let me play you this voicemail question and get your take on this.
Hey, Rob and Sophie, this is Josh from Anderson, South Carolina. And I have a question about the idol nullifier. Now, from a TV viewing perspective, it was super entertaining to watch and I loved it, but it just seems like an overpowered advantage to help the majority from a game perspective. It doesn't seem to really be about the idol either, because it's not really about blocking an idol. It's really more about blocking a person from being immune in any way. It just makes someone as vulnerable as possible and makes it foolproof if you have the majority. So I don't really know if I like the idol nullifier. I think it might just be too overpowered, but it worked really well here in this situation. Love to know what you guys think. Thanks.
Sophie, this was almost the perfect situation for the idol nullifier to be played, where we had people who were in the minority, but it was a 6-5. And then there was also the vote got stolen. So in one tribal council round, the minority became the majority in that voting round. And then we're able to use the idol nullifier to take out a person from what was, from the perspective of the viewer, was the majority. And so the underdogs were able to use the idol nullifier. But do you agree that this is very unlikely to happen the same way again?
Yeah, right. It is. Well, I mean, I don't understand. I'm not sure if I quite agree with him. I mean, think about any time the idol has ever been played on somebody and then they've been safe because of it, right? It's not always in a majority-minority situation. Isn't the idol nullifier just as interesting in any situation where somebody should have gone home and is instead saved by the idol?
But I feel like that it in a perfect world, isn't that, like, how many times is the audience upset when the person who plays the idol stays, where, you know, yeah, even like, you know, the person who even like going back to your Samoa,
yeah,
when Russell is playing the idol, the audience is cheering for Russell. They're on board with that. You know, it's sort of like imagine this scenario where it's like, you know, you have six people or seven people and one person has the idol. And it's like, well, I know I'm not going home tonight. So you got somebody from your side is going out tonight. It's like, well, idol nullifier. And, you know, the little insurrection ends up getting squashed, yeah, an episode earlier.
No, I hear you. It's unusual that, I agree, it's unusual that you would want to root for it other than in this circumstance. The other thing that I thought about the idol nullifier is, it was just me, or was it, like, a little anticlimactic the way it was actually just produced? I think the pulling out of the hat, like, it, and maybe it was just because in the circumstance we were so excited about the extra vote that idol nullifier felt unnecessary, and in the end it was. But I just wonder if there was some other way that they could have played it. Like, I don't know, you know, immediately when Dan played the idol, to have the idol nullifier, you know, do something, or Jeff throws it in the fire. Like, somehow the delayed effect of the nullifier being pulled from the box, like, it just... I thought it was going to be make more exciting TV, and it wasn't as exciting as I was expecting.
Yeah, so I guess part of it is that, and this came up in the interview. So Josh Wigler has a great interview with Nick Wilson on The Hollywood Reporter, and I'm sure we'll touch on it here today, and I'm sure we'll touch on it with Josh when we get to the Wiggle Room later on this week. But part of the thing that was confirmed in that Nick Wilson interview is this idea of, so had The Idol been played on somebody else and The Idol nullifier was used on Dan, it would have just never come up. Jeff would not have revealed it. And there was an Idol nullifier used tonight, and that was on Dan. So Dan, if you would have played The Idol on yourself, it wouldn't have worked. So it just wouldn't have come up. So I guess it had to have been done in that way, but they didn't even show us Carl, you know, using it, or like they didn't show Carl with the marker writing on it, where then it's like, okay, we know Carl has played it, but we don't know necessarily who he played it on. So yeah. It was a little bit like, you know, pulling the rabbit out of the hat.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the other thing, Rob, I'm sorry, this might be slightly off track, but you were asking for big picture ideas. And one of the things I've been thinking about recently is like this whole, when can you last play an idol? You can play it at the final five, right?
Final five, I believe.
Yeah. So, and maybe we already had this conversation, but it kind of just dawned on me recently, is that given you can play an idol at the final five, and now there's this fire making challenge at the final four, mm-hmm. does it like fundamentally change, like, do you think we're more likely to see pagongings or more likely to see what we're seeing now, which is like Goliath strong, David strong, because making it to the five is now like making it to the three, right? Like if you're a big threat, before you think, well, if I make it to my alliance of five, they're all going to get me out at five or four. Mm-hmm. Now, like if you have an idol and you have the fire making challenge and you're like this big threat and you think you can win some immunity challenges, like you no longer even have to worry about like the innermost part of the onion.
Yeah.
Like, just staying with your five is enough. Like I think it encourages less swapping over from the bottom.
Yeah, I think this is a really great point. And I think that has to do also with why we're seeing so much drama here around the final, you know, 11, final 10, final nine, because it's almost like, hey, if you're the four or five Davids, you're almost not going to be incentivized at all to flip back over. So we may see all of these fireworks happen around like 10 or 11 as like the two, four or fives end up really jockeying for position. And it's like, hey, I don't know about necessarily the five, but I do agree about, hey, let's just get to the four. Now, it used to be, hey, let's just get to two. We'll sit in front of the jury. And then, let's just get to three. And now it's let's just get to four, because in the fire making challenge, who knows how that's going to break down. So now you get your group of four to the fire making challenge and then see what happens. And so, you know, there'll be one of the odd Davids out. I do think that there is certainly a scenario where these five Davids now run the table and now completely pagong the Goliaths off, and now they have no incentive really to switch, because, you know, why do we necessarily want, unless there's like, okay, well, these are the two most unlikable Goliaths, maybe if I get to the end with those people I'll have a guaranteed win. But it seems like a lot of risk,
especially I think a lot of risk in this new age of Survivor where everybody's playing so hard. I think if there's less of a division, especially in this tribe, between like who's going to be the big jury threats and who's not. Like, there's not a lot of goats, right? You see Angelina and you see Christian is emerging as a threat that everybody sees him to be. But it feels like if I was Nick, I would think to myself, like, I could make an argument against any of these people. Like, I think at least in my era of Survivor, I think there was a lot of focus on who are the people you want to take to the end. And I think it's been flipped from who are the people you want to take to the end to like, how can you further and further elevate yourself to win against anybody that you take. It's all about like you and your resume. Yeah,
that's a really great point in terms of it is harder to pick to really design. Okay. I'm Boston Rob and I know I want to go to the end with, you know, Philip and Natalie. How do I get that? Because now you have the fire making challenge, which is such a wild card where, you know, the person who wins immunity is going to be there. And then the person who wins immunity gets to pick somebody. So that's, you know, two of those spots occupied. And then also then some there. And then even if you're the person that won the immunity, there's going to be a person that you can't decide who is in the final three based on who's winning the fire making challenge. So it is very hard to really construct that perfect final three that you want. But I haven't ever heard it talked about that way in terms of where you want to get such a, you know, a great quote unquote resume where I can win against anybody. Now, I talked to Sandra on Friday, and Sandra was, you know, really scoffed at the idea of the resume. I thought she made some good points where I feel like that the jury does tend to vote with its heart as opposed to its head. So how do we reconcile this idea of talking about the resume in those terms versus how the juries actually vote?
Yeah, I agree with Sandra. I hate the word resume. I slightly throw up in my mouth when I use it myself. Mm-hmm. I hate it when Allison uses it on this season. I feel like the fact that she uses resume makes her somebody that I think will be unlikely to win the game. Because I know I wouldn't want to vote for somebody who I think thinks about Survivor in the terms of resume. I think what's more important is like ensuring that you play the game, you know, true to yourself, and that you are like making active decisions that are in line with like your story. I think it's less about a resume and it's more about like your Survivor story. And the reason it's different, right, is a resume, you're in college, like everybody's trying to build the same resume. They're all trying to get, you know, the top grade and volunteer at some place and be the captain of the varsity soccer team. A story, like you could have one person's story that's all about playing sports and you have somebody else's story that's all about making friends. And I think that's like what makes a great Survivor winner is like they tell their story better than anybody else telling their own stories. And so I agree. I don't think it means a resume. And I think that's where some people go wrong is where they feel like, oh, I have to do that big move because I need to get it on my resume. Like your resume doesn't have to be the kind of person that does big moves. And I think it was Mike. Was it Mike or was it Allison this episode who was like, and I suddenly realized like what I needed to do was step back. Mm-hmm. I think it was Allison. I needed to slow down. I can't remember the words she put. But in my mind, that was like she was being driven to like do what she thought she needed to do was do these big moves to go on the resume. And she realized that like being true to herself and playing her game meant not doing that. And like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down with Sandra.
Yeah. So I know that. I know you know, you don't want to get on her bad side. I understand. I hear you. I understand that. So this is such a great distinction that you're making between a resume and a story. And, you know, I listen to a podcast sometimes called Story Brand, where it talks about how, you know, basically, all of marketing is telling a story. And there's only a couple of stories in all of, you know, every story is a different version of the same story. And so I think that's such a great point where, you know, a big move can be part of your story where when you sit at the final three, it's like, hey, I'm the person that everybody counted out, but then I went ahead and I made this move at this point, and then I changed my game and I took the bull by the horns and I played an idol when everybody was counting me out, and that's why I'm here. And that's a story that you're selling to the jury. And that's, I think that's a great illustration of why you won, because you were able to articulate a story of, yes, I was with these people from the Apulu, but I was the one that I was really, you know, coach was doing his thing, but I was the one person that I was really, the brains behind the operation. And you were able to get people enrolled in that story. And Sandra is the same thing, where she gets to the end and she's able to tell the story of, Russell and Parvati, they were doing this, but I was the one that I was telling you guys the whole time. And yeah, I didn't win challenges, but I knew what was going on and I was trying to get you guys and you didn't believe me. And that's why I should win the game. And so a resume is, hey, I won three immunity challenges and I went on two rewards. And then on day 19, I helped to build the fire. And then everybody was very happy when I did that. And that's a resume. And that's just like, useless facts. And that doesn't motivate anybody to ultimately. And I think that's a really great point where we look at these Survivor winners. They were the ones that were able to articulate a story to the jury. And then that's why I do believe a jury votes with its hearts. And sometimes it's based on information that happened over the course of the game. But I do think that they're more compelled by these emotional arguments that are part of the winner's story.
I totally agree. Especially having just come off watching Samoa, right? Good representation of that is like Eric told Natalie's story for her.
Yeah.
Right. He had that like amazing speech where he was like, the person who might be most deserving is, you don't realize it, but it might be you. Or it was just, it was like incredible language. And it summed up Natalie's story. I find that when I watch the finale of Survivor, my fiance, it drives him crazy, but I'm always pausing and like trying to tell the story for the people who aren't winning. Or you think of Philip, right? When he got beaten by Dawson Robb, Philip had a story. Philip, mm-hmm. I felt this way with Coach. I felt like if Coach could have told his story, he would have won. Philip had his story where he could have been like, guys, you all thought I was nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not nuts. Like that was the only way I could get here, was being the crazy guy who everybody looked over. And if he had told that story, Like, I think he could have had a much more legitimate shot at winning.
Right.
Coach was the same way in my season. I was like, all you need to do is say that you're a snake oil salesman and it's over. Like, that's your story.
But right. But Coach told a story that just didn't vibe with what the people on the jury had experienced, where he told the story that, you know, hey, I was authentic and I was this. And I'm like, wait, that's not what happened.
That's not what we saw. Oh my God. Survivor is so cool.
And even Jenna Maraska in my season, where it was like, when we sat there, it was like, okay, well, her story is that she was, you know, the 21-year-old, and yeah, she had her problems throughout the game, but there was a sense where she had sort of, you know, grown up, and that's when, you know, she won the last couple of challenges, and she was sort of like, had, blossomed, or I'm trying to think of what the right word was, but, you know, taken flight. At the very end, and we're like, okay, you know, and Matthew really, you know, wasn't able to, you know, articulate the story of, you know, of his journey, and I think that, you know, and that was a lopsided vote as well. So you know, but this, and you know, when we get to people like, you know, talking about like with, you know, and Jeremy and Adam, where they also have like an emotional part of that story. Like, it's not why they won, but I think it's, you know, a selling point in sort of like, you know, part of that story that the jury is hearing.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. This is weird. We're onto something. Okay. Let's go back to Dr. Allison, because I really wanted to get your take on Allison. And I'm glad that you have already been, you know, very tuned into what she's talking about. So I pulled a couple of Allison clips in terms of hearing what she's talking about. I want to play them and sort of like get from you where you think she should be headed in the game. Okay, this is Allison from this last episode.
I have been torn between sticking Goliath strong and making a big move that will be put on my Survivor resume. And I have built a great relationship with Gabby. We get each other. And I'm seeing that if I quit, I'll have security in the Davids and I'll be in this beautiful position to play this game.
Okay, so that's the first part earlier in the episode when she's talking about that she's going to go and join up with the Davids. And then later on in the episode, she decides, okay, well, that's not the best course of action.
As Hera is pitching Dan to be the one out, I start to feel that the Davids are trying to pull a fast one over on us. It just seems like they're on board too fast. So as we approach Tribal Council, I'm finally having some clarity. I've been so busy trying to do something, I didn't realize that the right move is actually to take a step back and go with the flow. Stand there strong with the Goliaths.
Okay. So, Sophie, in Survivor South Pacific, there were plenty of times when Albert was coming to you with, hey, let's make the big move. This is the resume move that we need to make. And you felt like that the bigger, the better move was standing pat. For Dr. Allison, how do you see things for her?
I feel bad judging her post hoc, right? Because it's quite obvious now she made the wrong decision. Well, given now, right, that they're 5-5, given that, like, Goliath Strong has now failed 2 times in a row, you start to wonder, like, is a Goliath Strong strategy going to work? And that was obviously the strategy that she took. That said, like, I do think that there were some, some signs, right? The fact that it didn't work the time before, you think more of them would have been a little tipped off around, like, there's stuff happening here, right? They all lied to our face last time and then got away with it. Like, so maybe we should be a little more worried here. I think for Allison herself, like, I don't know enough about the inter-Goliath dynamics to know, like, is she right in sticking with the Goliaths? Is she in a good position? That said, like, I remember Allison in episode 1 of the show, Jeff was explaining the David versus Goliath theme, and he was describing the Goliaths or the Davids as like people who persevered and have come over obstacles, and Goliaths as people who kind of had a silver spoon. Mm-hmm. And Allison, in a unfortunately unlikable way, I think, raised her hand and said something like, well, you know, we've struggled too, which is like just a little hard to hear when you hear the David stories and then you hear it from a physician. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, if that's truly how she sees herself, which, like, I'm sure she has overcome an incredible amount of obstacles, like, going back to the story thing, like, I'd imagine, and also given that she has this inclination to try to go with the Davids, like, the thing I'd want to see Allison do is to break out of this, like, box that she's in that Jeff put her in the first day. And she tried to break out of it that first day and break out of that box and say, no, like, I am not a cookie cutter 6 foot Goliath. Like, I'm going to do, like, I'm actually friends with a lot of the Davids. I've overcome obstacles too. Like, and I think that what's strange is that she tried to on day one establish herself as not a Goliath, mm-hmm. and yet she is, I think, time will tell, but to me this whole roll with the punches on her side feels less, it feels like she is going with the flow rather than deciding like she wants to create a flow and make it flow. Mm-hmm. Like on my side, so Survivors of Pacific, I was like very intentional about like, I want everybody to go with the flow. I'm going to do anything in my power to make sure everybody sticks with it. Allison at this point did not seem to make that decision. She seemed to like look at two paths and decide to like jump on the one that had the running stream that was going to carry her somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's too bad because I think that Allison is somebody who it seems like she wants to break out and do something different, and she just hasn't done it yet. And by different, I don't mean big. I mean, like, she has a friendship with Gabby. She has personal relationships. People seem to like her. Like, I want to see her leverage them.
Yeah.
And this is like a move in a chess game.
It seemed like that the best moment, I feel like, or one of the best moments for Allison this season was when she was talking with Gabby about how, hey, I know Dan has an idol. I want to, you know, we have to blindside Dan. We will work together and blindside Dan. And now this time out, Dan did get blindsided and she wasn't part of it. It was almost like, you know, the one sort of moment that she could, be able to point to and say, okay, hey, I was the first person to jump on with the Davids. And then I was part of blindsiding Dan. I knew he had the idol. And she really kind of had two shots at this because there was the original Strike Force where it was her and Alec and Mike, and they were talking about working with the Davids. And I really liked that group that came together. And then they sort of had like a second bite at the apple when Kara ends up taking the Mike spot, and her and Alec have this opportunity of like, okay, now let's go ahead. And maybe the Davids are less inclined this time around as opposed to where they've got John out of the game, and now they've got all these advantages. And so maybe they were sort of like, less enthused about it. But I really feel like that if you are Allison and you're trying to figure out what is the story I'm going to tell at the end of the game, the story of, this game was David versus Goliaths, and there were Goliaths that felt like, hey, we're just going to pound these Davids into the ground. But, I came together with this group and we said, what if we work together? What if we go ahead and we blindside some of those people from the Goliaths? And then she could sort of like have that as the jumping off point of her story where she can sort of, and maybe it might be tough with a couple other people who were also the architects of that, but I feel like that at least it would be something where, she'd have a little bit more of a direction. Now, at this point, I was thinking about this with South Pacific also. Now, if you have one person who's going to flip by themselves, then how is this different than what happened to Cochrane in your season?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good point, but like, she's not the only person talking about flipping, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she has Kara, she has Alec, Mike is talking about flipping. And there was so much intermingling and voting, like Goliath voted themselves off on when the tribes swapped into three tribes multiple times. So like, I don't think this is as much on our season, Opolu versus Savai, it was such tribal lines. Like, it was so intense. And I know that they have this David versus Goliath thing, but I almost feel like the players are like actually intermixing and then just reverting to it for the votes. So I think that like the actual flip would not be as big. I also think for Allison, like, I think when you stand up in front of a jury, I think a jury is always excited to see somebody who has stepped out of their skin and stepped out of the role that they usually play in life to evolve. Like what you say with Jenna Maraska, like she came in as this 21-year-old like girl who like didn't seem to be able to do much. And then by the end, she was a flying bird or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like Allison is like in one of what I think is like one of the most risk averse professions in the world. Right. Like she comes in as like the straight laced doctor. Like, I just don't think you can win coming in as the physician and then being the physician the whole way through. Like, unless people see you as this like caring healer, like I think people would want to see Allison break out from that box that she's in. And she's decided not to do that.
Let me get your take on the person that stole Allison's vote this week. And that is Nick. And I think he's really starting to emerge as, a major, major figure. And he's been there, around the whole time. But in terms of his gameplay, I think he's really starting to be recognized for what he's doing in the season. Do you have any opinions on Nick?
Opinions. Oh my God. I only have emotions. Nick is amazing.
Amazing. Okay.
Huge fan of Nick. Nick is probably my favorite player. Not necessarily for an entertainment standpoint, but I think he's very entertaining, but he's definitely my favorite player in a long time. I watched a secret scene of his recently, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago, where he talks about trying to play under the radar and how he thinks he's in this perfect position where like nobody's really seeing him. And that kind of like self-awareness, I think, is so unusual. Like, it's so unusual that you see somebody in secret scene saying, I am trying to play under the radar, right? Like, that is unusual, and like, it has been working for him. Like, honestly, I struggle to see a situation where Nick does not get to the finals and win. He's in such a good position. He's in with everybody. He's created these incredibly like hilarious alliance names that makes everybody ingratiated.
I mean, let's not get carried away with incredibly hilarious, but he's made the, you're right about that. It makes people feel good.
It makes people feel great. Very Boston Rob, like that Boston Rob never even did. So super impressed with Nick. I also think that Nick is doing a good job. Like, I think often like a dominant strategic man sometimes in the game, like often is playing very, very fast and is like setting the pace of the game. So like thinking about like Tony and people who are playing so quickly, you think either they're going to get to the end and win or they're going to like fall on their face, but they are the ones setting the pace of the game. And Nick, I feel like, is doing something unusual where he's like taking a step back a little bit and like slowing things down.
Yeah. That's a really good point, because when you're talking about like, you know, Tony's and Boston Rob's and even like, you know, JT at times, it's like, what's going on? What are you up to? What is this? Yeah. What is this move? And, you know, he is actually, you know, very, very patient and sort of like puts the relationship first and then sort of uses the bond that he's made to be able to have these quick conversations with people that ultimately end up moving the needle. And he's not really afraid to, you know, last week, you know, Davey was the one who was able to make the big move. Then this week, he was the one that was able to make the move. But also Carl came in and then he had his idol nullifier. He talks about in the interview with Josh, though, that he the reason why he put the vote on Allison was because he wanted then if Dan decided to play his idol on Allison, then Carl's idol would have, or his idol nullifier would have, you know, not been seen. So he would have had sole ownership for this move this week.
I loved reading that Josh Wiggler article. Anybody who hasn't really read it, read it. And I just love, like, the reason Nick's such a great player is when Josh asked him, like, hey, why'd you guys do what you did? It wasn't just one answer. He was like, oh, four reasons. Mm-hmm. Three of them were like incredibly strategic and clever. And the fourth one was like, and I just like to see Allison squirm because it's fun to troll her. And I think that's what makes Nick so fun, is that like in many ways, in some ways he's a game bot. In other ways, he is incredibly social player, right? Who makes all these people feel great and has good bonds with them. And then he's fun. Like, I love watching people play the game who are having so much fun, like Tony making his like Spy Shack, and Nick seems to be legitimately like loving the game when he's out there. And I think his answer to Josh Wigger's question about the strategic thing like summed up Nick perfectly. He's almost like, sometimes you watch the show and you're like, oh, there's that person who's supposed to be like the audience, right? He's representing us, and you know, we're the smart ones watching the show, and like, oh yeah. And I almost think that like Nick is smarter than the audience. Like, I feel like the audience in this show is like maybe like Mike White or Gabby, and Nick is like a step above in this way that it's like, am I enthusing too much?
I don't know. I'm not. You're losing me a little bit with the audience is Mike White and Gabby. But let me play you another clip from a secret scene. This was another secret scene this week, and we saw like the first half of the secret scene is very close to what we saw in the episode where after the tribal council with John going home, then everybody comes back and is talking about that. But then there's a conversation between Christian and Gabby and Nick, and they're talking about, you know, they're kind of filling Gabby in on what's going on here and how that all came together. Let me play this.
This is the first time in Survivor history that we split the minority vote. And basically, I made a plan. We put three votes on John and two on Angelina. And that way, if the Goliaths play an idol, a Goliath is still going home. And it worked perfectly.
I'm so glad I have friends like you guys who freaking know how to play this game.
I pulled it off.
It's the freaking Southern accent.
It's the accent.
You're so trustworthy.
He came to me with the vote plan.
My secret advantage is I'm underestimated. And I've been playing that up with my aw shucks strategy and just playing dumb. But tonight, I went for the fences. And I hit a home run. I hit a grand slam.
I don't know how easy that was to hear without the subtitles, but Christian is talking about how it's this guy. He's so trustworthy that he's at the plan. And Christian is talking about Nick. This guy is a freaking genius.
I do worry. I watched that secret scene already, actually. And I'm a little concerned that like Nick has blown his cover.
Yeah, a little bit. He may be peaking too soon. That is a possibility.
He may be peaking too soon, but I do think that the Southern accent goes a long way.
Yes.
And even in that scene, right, when they're talking about it, Nick, more than being like, guys, aren't I amazing? I just saved all our asses, takes on the attitude more of like, oh my God, wasn't that amazing or whatever. Like he's much
yeah.
He's like shocked at himself. Mm-hmm. Which even though I think Gabby and Christian after were like, oh my God, he's so good. Once he starts talking to you guys in the Southern accent and being surprised at himself, I think they might start to forget.
Tell me if you think this is crazy. I think that he's almost like a better version of JT 1.0, the JT from Chunky Jeans, because for a couple of reasons of that, I think he comes off as less of a physical threat in terms of, you know, what he's doing. And then also he definitely like he almost, you know, he has Christian, but he almost kind of doesn't need the Steven. Like he sort of, you know, is able to understand everything on his own. And then instead of like having a Steven, he has like four Stevens, you know, and they all think that they're the Steven. And so he's really good. And then he's also like articulate, like he can then speak and you can understand what he's saying. And so he's got a lot going on right now.
Yeah. And he doesn't have as much, I don't think, of a like a heart-wrenching story as JT had, right? JT had like a thing with the cat. And JT was younger, too, I think, the first time he went out.
When you say a heart-wrenching thing, what do you mean?
JT had like a, like, I want to own a cattle ranch. I remember, maybe I'm wrong, in Token Cheats, much more talk about like the money and what it would do for his life.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which can also be threatening, right? Can also be like, oh, this guy is totally gonna win.
Okay, yeah, I think that's sort of like baked in with being from the Goliath tribe that they all have sort of like their own hardship. So I don't think we have to worry about that in terms of being threatening. But no, it's been very impressive to watch Nick over these last couple of weeks. And so, where do you think this goes now, Sophie?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was debating this last night with my fiance about like, do the Davids now run the table? Or, you know, with Christian's idol being the linchpin, or even just like managing to get a Goliath from just being terrified to flip. Or do we now see like David Goliath intermixing?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm leaning towards, I'm trying to think. The scene to the next episode showed Christian and Gabby and Carl getting into a fight.
Yeah, not buying it.
Yeah, part of me does worry that the Davids now are so like up on themselves and are feeling confident that the Goliaths are no longer Goliath strong, especially because they voted against each other last episode, that they might like break this David super force too soon. But I kind of agree that I'm not buying it. Like, I think that they're like after barely getting the numbers, are they really going to give it up this soon? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So my prediction is David's run the table, but probably not till the final five. I'm guessing like a couple Goliaths go, and then there's a little bit of intermixing as the Davids start looking around and being like, oh shit, when you have a tribe of Power Rangers, they're all Power Rangers at the end. Like, you know, let's go get some of these other guys in here. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I do think that this next vote could be kind of straightforward, where maybe this is like the vote where everybody just like, all right, let's just vote out Angelina tonight because that's the easy one. We don't want to go to rocks where it's like, the Goliaths don't trust each other enough where they're going to have the 5-5. And so then you get like Alec and Kara, even Mike and everybody's just like, all right, we'll all vote for Angelina tonight. Let's just get through this, this one. Although, but you know, the way people are playing right now, maybe even though they don't like each other, is it the craziest thing for, because if you're the Davids, I mean, you feel like you have so much momentum, would they go to rocks for you know, if it's going to be a vote against Angelina? And they do have Christian's idol, so maybe they feel like that they could play it potentially.
And also, what Goliath is now going to want to go to the end with a David, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Davids are almost like, if they turn at each other, like the Goliaths are going to be Goliath strong again in an instant,
right?
But I do think one interesting thing is that there are like Nick's in a good position, but I worry a little bit about Gabby, right? Gabby is somebody who we saw on the tribe before that she was on, where she felt like out of place and all the brochachas were hanging out and it wasn't her. I could see Gabby beginning to suddenly look around and think, damn, these four guys around me, like, they've played idols, they've played advantages, like all four of them have had parts in these votes,
yeah,
except for Gabby. And so I think that this relationship between her and Allison could reemerge,
yeah,
as Gabby's attempt to like do something big and be part of it all.
Well, was that ever something that was going through your head? Because look at your situation when you get down to, I mean, I think that the last woman left besides you was Edna, who I think went out at 7. And so, yeah, and then it's you with Brandon Hance and eventually Ozzy and Coach and Albert and Rick. And so did you ever think about going a different direction because potentially that to work with another woman?
I didn't. And that's because my tribe was so unlikable that I was convinced that they would lose. So like Gabby's with Christian, Nick, Davey, and Carl. Like, come on. She's in the tribe of puppies.
Yeah. So what do you think that Gabby should be doing?
She's got a Brian Heidick, that tribe.
What, and make them all think that they're with her?
No, didn't he kill a puppy?
I you know, I don't even want to get into that. There was an incident, and people can Google that if they're feeling particularly morbid.
Wait, Rob, what do you think about? Sorry, maybe you're going here, maybe you're not. Well, should I ask? No, I mean you're hosting, but either way, what do you think of Alec? Well, I'll say there's two people on the tribes that for me are like total wild cards. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm thinking about them. One is Carl, and the other is Alec.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carl, he feels like less of a wild card to me. I feel like I know exactly, you know, where Carl's head is at. And I feel like what Goliath is he flipping to? He's all in with the Davids. He's like, yeah, you know, he's somebody who's going to potentially get to the end. And then that's like the person that he's like, you know, bring him to the end. And other than, you know, he's got the idol nullifier, but I'm not sure what, you know, what else he's going to be able to tell us his story of, you, yeah, know, why he's the winner of the season. So he's a good person to have there at the end. So he may ultimately end up going pretty far. But in terms of Alec being a wild card, I agree that we don't know exactly where his head is at. And we've seen him have conversations with, you know, some of the Davids and Nick he seems tight with and Davey. And then we've also seen him talk to Christian. So he does. He is a person who has a lot of relationships.
A lot of relationships, and I think also makes a lot of like unexpected moves. Even the flip he did on the, you know, during the tribe swap was very strange and really unexplainable. And the flip that he, or the fact that he voted out voted for Angelina last week, if he continues to bounce around fast enough, I think that he could potentially make it to the end of this game. Like he's so unpredictable and he's such a wild card. I just worry that like he has no like, you know, clear strategy that's going to drive him anywhere.
Alec has been such an interesting story because I think myself included, I think that we vastly underrated him as a Survivor player. But I'm wondering if maybe, you know, we've gone too far the other direction. And now are we overrating Alec as a Survivor player?
Not overrated.
He's not overrated because I think he made a really bad move in hindsight. And I know that's always dangerous to do. But I think that when he told Nick last week that Christian was the target, he may have ultimately killed his chances in the game because that was the linchpin for all of this happening against the Goliaths.
Yeah, but, you know, I agree it was a bad move. But thus far, Alec's bad moves have affected other people and not him. I kind of see him, you know, those movies where like there's like kind of a bumbling guy and he like, I don't know, he drops the ball in a like warehouse and then he walks out of the warehouse and the ball ends up like rolling towards a bomb and the warehouse blows up and he's like not even aware of it.
He's Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. Is Inspector Gadget always causing like chaos behind him?
Yeah. A lot of times. Yeah.
Yeah, like that kind of character in a movie that like he just doesn't even realize, or like a Mr. Bean. I don't know. The kind of guy who like is causing like everybody around him to like totally destruct, but he just is like kind of walking on and doesn't really realize it's happening. I feel like that's what Alec could be doing without realizing it. And he could come out unscathed where like he totally demolishes his own whole Goliath tribe in the I don't know. What's the phrase?
In the process. Yeah.
In the process. but he comes out unscathed. I wouldn't be surprised. That doesn't mean he's a good player. It's funny.
But I don't know necessarily where, unless he's able to rekindle the Strike Force, either version one or version two. I'm not sure how necessarily that you have this group of David that says, hey, you know what? Let's take this, immunity threat with us. This is like a good guy to bring along with us for the ride.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Or maybe he goes on a run.
That's what I'm thinking. I think a run, potentially another idol. Mm-hmm. Like if he makes it to the end, it's not because Alec has brought together a mastermind group alliance. Like it is because he has accidentally voted out all of his best friends and wins immunity at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Now, we can't talk about Alec without talking about Kara. And I think that she's also somebody who I think has been pretty under the radar, but maybe might be starting to come out from under that radar. Do you feel like that Kara is going to be somebody who is going to go out in the next couple of votes and sort of be a non-factor, or somebody who's going to ultimately have a lot more of her story to be told this season?
I mean, on an editing front, I thought she was going to go home this episode. I felt like she was having her emergence right before being sent home, mm-hmm. with this whole I can't let Dan take down my game. And then it didn't happen. But I still think that she's probably going to go home sooner rather than later. I do think she's having an emergence. I'm impressed with her ability to be so sniper-like with her relationship with Dan, mm-hmm. right? It was not her falling into a relationship on Survivor and screwing up her game because of it. That was her using Dan until the very last moment when she no longer thought she needed him. Mm-hmm. So I'm super impressed by that. I think that she's a little too late.
But tell me, how do you feel like that she handled that situation? Because I kind of feel like, did she maximize that relationship for as much as she could have in the game? Where I think that she sort of got caught up in the, okay, this guy likes me. He has an idol. I need to blindside him because that's the thing that's going to be, that I'll point to later on in the game as a reason why I should win. As opposed to, could she have leveraged that further in the game, that relationship where Dan was willing to do anything for her instead of just, discarding him? Was there a way that she could have used him better to be able to do her bidding?
No, it's a good point. It did feel a little bit like she had suddenly realized, oh my God, I Dan has leached onto me. I have to get
almost from the beginning. I feel like that was her thought.
Yeah, but it was a sudden realization that she had to do something about it. And then you're probably right that she probably didn't quite do the right thing. I've always thought that an interesting strategy on Survivor would be to pretend fall in love with somebody, and then because they think you're in love with them, they think that they have control over you, and leverage that.
Okay, so this is interesting. So you are going to I feel like did Nick Majorano try this with Debbie? I'm not sure. Well, that was sort of Debbie has a crush on me. I'm trying to think of if anybody's done that. So there's somebody you're not interested in them. You are playing them along. I guess it's but you're acting like you're in love with them. It's not just you're flirting.
No, you're acting like you're in love with them. And I also think that it needs to be a situation where it's not necessarily a couple that you might imagine in real life, mm-hmm. right? I'm imagining, I don't know, for instance, if who is the hottest guy who's ever been on Survivor? I can't think of somebody.
Besides Hot Cop Dan?
Besides Hot Cop Dan.
This is a Rorschach test. I would say Michael Yerger.
Okay, so let's take Michael Yerger. And let's take Gabby, right? Gabby's beautiful, but she's not a Libby model or whatever. And so Gabby, on the season with Michael Yerger, she pretends to fall in love with Michael Yerger. Mm-hmm. She does it by, I don't know, telling people who are Michael Yerger's friends, guys, this is crazy. I know I'm on Survivor, but I can't stop thinking about it. Right? And he is not falling in love with her. She's just falling in love with him. And then she uses that power dynamic and the fact that Michael Yerger is oh my God, this girl's in love with me, to then, I always just believe that you are more powerful from a position of weakness, mm-hmm. rather than from power.
Is this what happened with James and Natalie on Big Brother a couple seasons ago?
Oh, did Natalie do that to James?
I don't think that James did it to Natalie.
Natalie did anything. Like, it's from that position of where somebody thinks, the moment somebody thinks they have power over you, like that is when you truly have power over them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this has ever been done on Survivor. You've only seen like real romances. I think like a fake falling in love would be really effective.
Okay. I do think that that's interesting. Yeah, Kara is, I don't know where it's going with her. Steven is very high on her.
Really? Why?
I'm not exactly sure, but that Steven is pretty high on Kara all season.
All season. Oh my God. I don't see it. I mean, I'm impressed with her. Like, I think she seems to be a good player. I don't think she's not playing on the right board game right now. Like, I don't see the path for her to make it to the end.
But okay.
We'll see.
Let me ask you about Christian, that he has gotten the Cochrane comparison all season long as, one of our top Cochrane whisperers. Do you see it?
Yes, I see it. I think there's some parts of Cochrane that he doesn't have. Like, I think he has the like super likable to be around. Like, people like being around smart, funny people. Mm-hmm. And Cochrane and Christian both seem to be that. I think that one thing Cochrane did really well, which is what helped him win his season, and what I think will not help Christian, because I think he lacks it, is that Cochrane had this ability to make other people feel like they were both his best friend, but also potentially his mother, right? And Kara Moen, like a lot of people felt like they were taking care of Cochrane, right? Like, I think Brandy felt like she was caring for, like, everybody felt that they were the ones that Cochrane needed. And he made everybody feel like they were needed. And then because of that, right, like he almost like fake falling in love, kind of, you might say, he then stabbed them in the back at a time that they were least expecting it. Mm-hmm. And I think Christian, I think, doesn't have as much of that neediness. That,
well, why didn't that come back to hurt him? Because when we talk about, like, you know, the Dawns and people like that, yeah, and women who get to the final three and then they ultimately don't win the game because, oh, acted like my mother and you stabbed me in the back and then I can't get over that. Why was Cochrane able to walk away from that? Is that just strictly a male-female thing?
No, I think he did a really good job from my memory in like tribal councils. I remember he was very straightforward about like trying to win the game and how playing strategically. And I think he did a really good job of like separating personal from non-personal.
Because you felt like that he has no emotions. And then that it's like, well, you know, he didn't really, you know, he tricked me, but it wasn't like I felt like he really cared about me.
Exactly.
It was me caring about him.
This was something separate.
Right.
And Christian, I think, is just plain likable. I think he doesn't inspire that same kind of like need to be taken care of, right? He's quite, like, in a lot of ways, he's much less self-effacing. Actually, I'm not sure he's self-effacing at all compared to Cochrane. And I think it was Cochrane's like self-effacingness and things like that that led him to the win. And Christian, I worry, is just a little, he's just likable. He's just like all the funny bits of Cochrane. Mm-hmm. So and the fact that he's been pegged as a threat this early on, I'm sure that Cochrane has not played, like, the fact that Cochrane played and won has not helped Christian. Mm-hmm. I doubt that if Christian was on South Pacific, he would be seen as a threat. But unfortunately, now he's in this type that I think is difficult to get out of.
Can he overcome this? Or do you think that now it's just going to be, just a matter of time until Christian's number is up?
I worry it's a matter of time, mostly because you saw some of his best friends turn on him. Mm-hmm. And if he is such a threat, the people like John and Dan are willing to go on him. Like, is he really going to scrap his way out of the Davids? I also think on South Pacific, part of the reason I won was that I benefited from the fact that we all said, like, this is not a game. This is real life. Like, people, like, Coach would say that almost every day. He'd say, people think this is a game. This follows you for the rest of your life. What you do on Survivor will be, you know, this is, and that was our way of building up this whole imaginary world of loyalty and honor and integrity. And I think the show is leaning toward, going in this direction towards like, we're all here to play. We're all going to fuck each other over, but we can still be friends after. Mm-hmm. And when you have that kind of attitude, right? Like, people like Christian, it's hard to form bonds that are strong enough that people won't break them.
Yeah.
If Christian was in the South Pacific and we had all, you know, said to each other, we're never going to backstab each other, he would have gone to the end. But on his season, I think all those people can say they love him, vote him out, and then he will forgive them because, well, it's all the game.
I can't see a person bringing him to the end. And I don't know necessarily if he's going to be able to go on an immunity run unless it's the, you know, we've seen this season. There are challenges that he is lethal in, but those tend to not be. Now, if it's the kind of thing where it's like, hey, drop the ball and then put it in at the exact right time, the type of thing. And we've seen that at the Final Four before. Maybe that's a challenge that he could really dominate. But I think that nobody in the right mind is going to bring him to the end.
I agree. Nobody in the right mind. And I think of the people who might, because they care about honor and loyalty and all these people, and he's not close with those people. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think Carl could be a really good alliance member for him. I think Carl might be somebody who might not backstab him, but I don't think he has that. He doesn't have that alliance.
Okay. So. Let's think fourth dimensionally now. Christian is in a second time on Survivor. How is he doing the second time out now? Has his threat level gotten so high that now he is a target off the bat in a second season also?
Oh my God. Good question. People, I think each archetype has a weird kind of like curve, right? People in the second season aren't always the same as people in the first. Like, I think the strong men become less threatening in the second season. Mm-hmm. Strong men in their first season are always more threatening. Christian, I'd imagine less threatening.
Less
only
threatening.
Because my only rationale is that in your first season of Survivor, it is all like the bonds you form are so intense that I think personality plays a huge role. And I think personality plays less of a role. I don't know. I never played the second season. But I'd imagine personality plays less of a role in the second season. Cochran always told me the second season felt like a job. Mm-hmm. And I think you become less threatened by, like, these electric personalities. And you become more threatened by, like, people who are strategic. And I don't know.
Okay. We'll see. Sophie, are you concerned that a potential wedding date could interfere with your second season of Survivor?
Oh, my God. I hope not.
Okay. All right, but nothing has changed. You would play again, right?
Yeah, of course I would. Okay. Button for punishment.
Yeah, I don't want to raise your threat level, but I would be very excited to if that prospect ever happened.
I'm excited to fall in love with somebody.
Oh, yeah. Is that why you cut the engagement ring off? Is this all part of the long con to fake fall in love with somebody on Survivor?
Yeah. Don't tell Christian. He doesn't listen to this, right?
I have more of these people I want to ask you about. What about Angelina? Because I was trying to think about this before we came on. I said, I bet Sophie either really loves Angelina or really does not care for Angelina. Or now you'll tell me that you're indifferent.
Yeah, I'm indifferent. I mean, I like her as a character, obviously. I think I would have liked her more as a player if she had not done that jury pandering thing. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, the whole taking, was it Natalie? No, who was
Elizabeth.
It? Elizabeth. The whole taking Elizabeth aside, she doesn't even have a relationship with Elizabeth. Like, it just was very Albert of her. That was the kind of thing Albert would do to everybody. And it was just gross. And Angelina, I think, I what she said with me resonated this episode about, like, if I was a man, people would be telling me that I was playing great or something. She said something like that. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that in her case, like, it's a little bit of a mix of the two. Mm-hmm. So I think she's in a tough spot, but I'm excited that there's a player like her on this season. I think both her and, was it Natalia? Mm-hmm. Were both, like, a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I wish they both hadn't been cast because they looked really similar.
On the same tribe. It was, yeah. It was tough to figure out. Any final thoughts on Dan?
I unfortunately chose Dan as my winner pick after the first episode.
I almost did too.
Edit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it kind of went all downhill. I think the most illuminating scene for me of Dan was the scene, I don't know if it was a secret scene or on the show, where he's, like, alone on the beach and he's moping. Mm-hmm. And Kara is like, you can't just sit alone on the beach in Survivor. And to me, like, that, I think Dan has, like, a whole facade. Didn't he lose, like, 300 pounds or something?
I don't think he lost 300 pounds. That would be pretty rare. I think he was over 300 pounds, and then he lost, a big, I would probably, you know, maybe 80 or 90 pounds. But I don't think he, I don't think he was pushing 500 pounds.
I just think that, like, the moments where we saw, like, the real Dan, I think you saw like a really complex human being. And I think we saw that quite a bit in the first episode. And when he's like alone on the beach, like, come on, that's just like a fat boy at lunch who doesn't have anybody to sit with, right? Like that was so, it was so heart wrenching because you knew that like what he wanted was he mm-hmm. wanted Kara to come over and give him a hug and be like, what should we do? And he's being like a 10-year-old child about it. And like, of course he should get up and go and talk to other people. I found that Dan fascinating. The Dan who was just like the brochacho to me felt like fake skin in a lot of ways.
Well, this is, you know, another wrinkle on this. So if somebody comes into Survivor and they already have their story where, hey, I was the guy and, you know, I was heavy and then I got my life together and now I'm an inspiration because I lost this weight. And now I'm a great looking guy. And now that women didn't used to pay attention to me, but now they do. And now look at me. And so he has that story baked in. It's very hard now to slap a Survivor 39-day journey on top of that. It's almost like that he's going through it. And now, hey, I'm the cool bro chacho. And that's how I'm playing the game because I'm all about this, you know, specific lifestyle of that. You know, I'm the good guy now. I'm the good guy who lost weight. And now, and, you know, even in his secrets, I don't know if you watch his Ponderosa video, but he's, you know, very much like, hey, I played the game clean. I had to, you know, be a role model for my kids. And so for him to then flip around, I think he was sort of like boxed in.
Well, I just think he had the perfect, I don't know if he told people about his weight loss and everything, but I think he had the perfect final tribal council speech was, you know, all he had to do was break down and say, like, guys, I've never been more proud of myself. Like what you don't know is that this was not a 39-day journey for me. This was a 2-year journey. Mm-hmm. And like, I've spent the last 2 years, like
I hit a plateau,
becoming a police officer. And like, I've like never felt like I've grown into the body that I created, but the last 39 days, like I've grown into this body. Like I am the person that I've been trying to be for 2 years. And like, I proved it. I won these chapters. Like he had the story baked in.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't deliver. And I think John, right? Like John had an amazing story as well about like, you guys all see me as like the big, whatever, like honcho, mancho, what are they called? I don't know.
The head honcho?
The wrestler dude.
The mayor of Slamtown? Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Dan didn't do it for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. To each their own.
I did like the brochacho Ponderosa scene, though.
You did like that. I was going to play the rules of being a brochacho to get your take on them.
If you wanted to weigh
in on that.
Honestly, sometimes I get excited about Ponderosa before I'm excited about the episode.
Ponderosa. You love Ponderosa.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I wish they were longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they are so well done, and they're really good. And, you know, I do feel like with the Ponderosa video, it's like, oh, my God, this is so good when I'm watching it. But then sometimes, like, if you ask me, like, sort of a visual comprehension test of, like, what did they say? Like, oh, boy, I think it was, I don't know. It was the music was good. The music was good. And it's a lot of, like, yeah, I feel like I can do anything now. But, you know.
I like the fake reality. It's like the Kim Kardashian kind of, like, let's have a reason, like, a thing that we're doing each episode.
Yeah. I'm going to go visit Elizabeth today and talk about being a parent. Like, okay.
Oh, I love that.
It's really good. What about Davey?
Davey is also somebody who I can't quite put my finger on. I think Davey is like a happy puppy, right? Who mm-hmm. like has all these like fun moments, but doesn't really know how to string them together. And I think that like he, unlike Nick, who has this like incredibly sharp vision for how he's going to play this game, like Davey is so fun to watch. And Davey is like creative. And so he's going to like make things happen and he's going to find idols. But like the question of like, can he actually bring that all together and like have a like A to Z strategies to bring it to the end of the game? I'm not sure about. But he's excitable. Like that secret scene of him with the jacket, like he's excitable, he's rootable. I would vote for him at the end. I'm just not sure he's gonna be able to get there.
Getting there is going to be tough, but I think he's another person that I think he would be tough to beat in the final three. I think especially the way that he can sort of like get all excited. Like, I feel like he would like get the jury really pumped up and get, you know, I think that Nick is probably has the highest upside. I think that in terms of just like being able to really, you know, move the people that are sitting there at the jury, I feel like that Davey has that upside too.
I agree. I think Davey and Christian like could really get the jury galvanized.
I mean, Davey, Christian, Nick would be that would be very tricky.
Split the money.
Yeah. And what about Mike White? Do you have any thoughts on Mike?
Well, I said this earlier that I think Mike is like the narrator this season. Like he is the audience, and like he is, I think there was a while where like, you know, we got to follow Mike's story of like he was going to be the person that brought the Davids and the Goliaths together. And now I think he's almost like overwhelmed by everything that's happening around him. Like he has lost the thread of the game. Like there was a while that he was dictating the pace and he's now fallen behind.
Mm-hmm.
But I like him as a viewer. I'm not sure I see the way that he recovers from this, only because I think the people that strung the Davids along, if there's a David jury, which I'd imagine there would be if he makes the final, like I think it's going to be hard for him to like, how does he make the argument to the Davids about like why he screwed them all over? Like, mm-hmm. I think that people are emotional beings. I think Allison, Mike, the people who were in that, what was it? The Strike Force or whatever.
Strike Force.
And then went back on it. I think that they're going to struggle at the end, right? Because they didn't have much conviction.
Yeah. Can Mike win the game?
I'm trying to think of who he would have to be against. Like, I think if Mike, Angelina, and Allison go to the final three, I think Mike can win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just so many likable people out there. And Mike, I think, because he waffled on this Strike Force, like I'm not sure what his argument at the end will be.
I also wonder, being a successful professional like he is, like I don't see the person who, you know, who are the goats when we're talking about a season when there's almost no goats, who are the people he could sit next to and then people would give him the money.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And also in a Davids versus Goliath season, when the Davids have been so scrappy and so clawing, like I think the people are going to want to reward in this season kind of people who have David-like qualities. And I think, I think that's going to make Alec really hard to win. But Mike to win, I think we'll need to draw on those David-like qualities to be able to win.
Okay, Sophie, I have another voicemail question I want to play for you. This one is from Alyssa.
Hi, Rob and Sophie. This is Alyssa from Toledo/Brooklyn. So if I were a David, I would want to go to a final tribal with two other Davids and duke it out for the Goliath votes. And vice versa if I were a Goliath. And my second choice would be to go to final tribal with two Goliaths and have all my fellow Davids on the jury. And vice versa if I were a Goliath. Agree or disagree? Is this thought occurring to the players as well, explaining their reluctance to turn on their own? Thanks.
Sophie, is this the type of thing that's going to only enhance the chances of a pagonging in the season?
I'm very confused because she gave like four options. But sorry, before I answer this, I'm pretty sure I've met this girl. I was walking in Brooklyn with my fiance.
Not Toledo?
No. And this girl came over and she said something like, oh my God, I just want to say congratulations. And my first thought was like that my fiance and I were holding hands and looked happy and my engagement ring was showing and a stranger wanted to say congratulations because they just like seeing love in the air. And then she explained that she was a Survivor fan. I was kind of disappointed.
Okay. But was she congratulating you on your win?
No, she had seen that I got engaged on Instagram or something.
Oh.
But I think she was also from Toledo. Like, I think the Brooklyn Toledo thing was very memorable. She was on the way to the dentist. I hope that appointment went okay. Anyway, this is her hello. If not, sorry. I'm not sure if I got the question.
Okay. So the question is that, are you better off if you are a David, are you better off being in the end with, either zero Goliaths or two Goliaths?
Oh, rather than two Davids. Are you better being a zero Goliath or two Goliaths?
As opposed to being with having one Goliath there.
My guess is probably zero Goliaths. I'm trying to think. If you're with two Goliaths, you've probably fucked over your Davids.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on if you fucked over your Davids to get there or if you've like won some immunities to get there. I think if you fucked over the Davids, it gets difficult. If you just won some immunities and you're like the scrappy come from behind person, like you win in an instant, right? Like the Aussie on the, you know, South Pacific would have won. I think that the safe bet is for both tribes to try to go with their own and to duke it out.
Yeah.
I think it's tricky when you start going inter-tribal alliances. Is this your point then about the pagonging? Like, are we then waiting on a pagonging now because of that?
Yeah. I don't know if prisoner's dilemma is the right thing to say here, but it's almost like you're better off being the one person left from your tribe at the end, as opposed to having one person left from the other tribe. And so the best case scenario might just be, hey, let's pick everybody off. But if you could somehow be the only person left from your group with the other group, you might have a decent chance to win if you're not seen as the person who killed your tribe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're that underdog who scrapped his way through, I'm trying to think of who's done that recently. But who was the guy, purple somebody on Samoa?
Brett?
Brett, yeah.
Yes, like, and Christian actually mentioned him in this last episode.
I try a new strategy for looking for the idol. I call it a Brett first search.
He did a Brett first search.
A Brett first search. But yeah, like, if you can be the Brett, right? If you can be the last member of your tribe, like, or Ozzy on my season, who manages to make it all the way through, of course, you're golden. But you also might end up being the, like, Sherry of Karamoan, who screwed over your whole tribe and, like, are now seen just, like, as the goat. So I think it really depends on why you're the last person in your tribe remaining.
Okay. All right. Sophie, let me give you an email question. Miles Nye wrote in at the Immunity Challenge. Sophie talked about a book that she read about building a house of cards. And I think he's obviously referring to in South Pacific, not in this last episode. I'm someone who has been working this year on reading more books. Can Sophie talk about her reading habits and when she reads Kindle versus Dead Tree and anything good that she's read lately? Big fan. I'll take the answer off air.
Oh, my God. Hello, Miles. Now, this is really embarrassing. I feel like I know all of these people. I think it's time to exit this community.
Wait, why? Go out on a high note?
Yeah, go out on a high note. Let's see here. I read a bunch of murder mysteries. So there's something called The Gentleman's Murder recently, which was really good, based in London. I also recently moved back into my apartment, and so I had a whole stack of New Yorkers that I hadn't read, which I read all of this weekend. I don't know. I can message you any good books I've read recently. I mostly like nonfiction, and I like magazines.
Okay.
And I like cookbooks before I go to bed.
Now, I've never heard of this before, so you will read a cookbook, and you would like read how to make a recipe before you go to sleep. Why and why specifically before you go to sleep? Because I've never heard of people reading cookbooks not making a recipe.
They send you to bed. They're so boring.
Is that what I find that
often books can be too stimulating, and then you can't go to bed. But cookbooks send you right off.
Yeah,
my friend Serafina does it. She turned us on to it.
Do you ever listen to a podcast before you go to sleep?
I don't know if I should answer this question.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll answer it. Well, so my fiance Rob listens to like almost all of your podcasts. Like, he the other day texted me, he's like,
what a catch, Sophie! What a catch you found.
The first 5 minutes of Sandra, because she's talking about couponing, and it was really funny. But I will say that, like, if we can't sleep, we're often like, just throw Rob on, we'll fall asleep in a second.
But you know what? I used to laugh and say, oh, yes, I know, I'm so boring, I put everybody to sleep. But I know I recently, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night, like one of my kids will wake up, and then I have a hard time going back to sleep. And I have like a... I do. I don't listen to myself. I listen to other things, or I listen to, sometimes like a Howard Stern show, because that's like 4 hours long on the Sirius. But I have like Bluetooth sleep headphones. And because the problem for me was always like, well, I'll wake Nicole up if I'm listening to a podcast in the middle of the night. So I really enjoy that. Speaking of podcasts, Neil Farrell wants to know, Rob and Sophie, can you ask Sophie if she listened to Serial Season 3 and what she thinks of it? Season 3.
I knew somebody was going to ask this.
A couple of people did.
Have you listened?
No, I have not. And I've heard it's good, but I've heard almost no buzz about it.
Exactly. And honestly, I feel like after Season 2, like, they should be sending me, you know, gift baskets or something if they want me to listen to Season 3.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm really excited to watch, which I haven't watched yet, is The Escape from Dannemora, the What's new that? Series. It's a new series produced by Ben Stiller. It's on Showtime, and it's about the escape of two convicts from the Dannemora prison, which is very close to where I grew up. Remember when these two guys, Matt, what were their names? Matt and Sweat. Anyways, they escaped from like one of like the Supermax prisons in upstate New York, like half an hour from my house. And it was a manhunt. And anyways, Ben Stiller has made this.
Wait, why is Ben Stiller making this? It's not a comedy. He's branching out.
Oh, it's a total, I mean, well, it's not a comedy, but it was like an absolutely hilarious story.
Oh, okay.
This, like, woman who was working in the sewing department, she ended up having an affair with one of the guys, and then she brought them all these tools, and they like drilled holes in the walls and escaped through the gutters, and she was going to like meet them and then go with them to Canada, but instead she got cold feet and went to the emergency room with a panic attack. And she's like a fascinating character.
Okay.
Because she was like taking these nude pictures and bringing them in. Anyways, you got to research it. It's amazing.
Okay. So it's not a like a true crime documentary. It's a it's actual a
recreation.
Yeah. Got it. All right. So I have one more question for you here. This is from Matt Walsh. He writes in and says, has Sophie ever forgiven Steven for not giving her proper credit for coming up with voting blocks? There's a clip of Sophie coming up with it at the 19 minutes and 15 second mark from her recap during Survivor Cagayan. Just like Angelina said, a man always takes credit for a woman's idea. Sophie, do you remember this?
I do not remember this.
Okay, so I have pulled a clip that Matt has pointed me to from 19 minutes into a interview you did on Rob as a Podcast on April 19th, 2014. Sophie Clark on the wisdom of big moves. Actually, the very podcast that I referenced about you saying that Tony was like a shark. Here's you and me from over 4 years ago.
So I actually think that as a group, who knows what the shuffle's going to be? It's going to be another big player. It's going to be a threat to win the game. So it's going to, I think it can be Wu if he doesn't win immunity with any combination of those people voting him out. And let's see, what does Tony want to happen next? I imagine that Tony's thing is Tony needs Wu because Wu's one of his closest allies as a voting block.
Ah.
Holy shit, Rob. My world is blown right now.
Now, Sophie, you don't think that Steven listened to that interview and then said, maybe I'll put that in my back pocket.
I think Steven definitely listened to the interview and said, I think I'll put that in my back pocket. Are you kidding me?
I don't think Steven listens to that many episodes of Rob's podcast.
I think he listens to mine. And like, that's not even, oh my God. I also not even just use the word. I seem to describe the concept around it too. I have a lot of sympathy for Angelina right now because I think that there's a lot of women in the world who don't even realize that their ideas are being poached, like mine.
Yeah.
Thank God for technology. Thank God for Jim from Arkansas. Who was this to call him?
Matt from St. Louis.
Similar.
All right, Sophie. Anything else you want to talk about from Survivor or beyond, wedding planning?
Does that give me a spot on Mount Rushmore? I think it does, right?
I mean, you're one of the go-to guests that we have on the podcast.
/ the only one who's actually invented a phrase that's ever been on Survivor before. Do I have anything else to talk about? No, I'm excited. Once I get closer to wedding planning, I'm excited to get your advice.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so flattered.
Yeah, you've gotten married before, right?
I've gotten married before. I mean, I don't know what actionable. I mean, I don't have any good advice, but I'm flattered that you would even think to ask me.
Of course.
Was it from when we were all together at Steven's wedding? Was because you the things I was saying, like, oh, wow, Rob is really tapped into, where everything should be and really is on the ball.
Yeah, the compliments you made were like on point.
Mm-hmm.
And the few complaints that you brought up, I was like, huh, that's a good point.
Yeah, so. Like this is too much fun. The wedding is too fun, and then it shouldn't be that fun because then people are gonna not know what to do with themselves after.
Exactly. I'm like, shit, I didn't even think about that.
Do you have a target date set?
Yeah, I'm gonna get married on August 24th.
Oh, all right, of 2019.
2019.
Are you worried that you could miss out some key nights in Big Brother 21?
No. Well, slightly worried. But I don't need to watch. I don't watch the live feeds all the time. Like, I just listen to Taryn's recap the next day.
Yes.
So there's no reason why I can't listen to that the day after my wedding.
Okay. All right. So is it a Saturday?
It's a Saturday.
Okay. All right. So not a key Big Brother night. And maybe hopefully you can work the honeymoon around the Big Brother schedule and then go from there. Did you have any thoughts? I know that last year you were very keen to weigh in on Josh versus Paul. Did you have any thoughts on Tyler versus Casey?
Tell me you were a Casey fan. I mean, I wasn't a Casey fan. I was a Tyler hater. You don't even need to tell me that because I've seen what happened on the social media after the season. So I know that we're in the same boat.
Yeah, Sophie, I have had to recuse myself from talking about Big Brother 20 anymore. Too much controversy.
I'll try not to make it worse for you, but let's just say I'm not buying a pair of Tangela flip-flops anytime soon. That's what they're selling on Instagram. I had to unfollow. It was too much. I loved Sam.
Let's go.
Yeah. Sam, you liked Sam.
I liked Sam. I liked Haley. And Casey was the best of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Sophie, what's next for you now? You're hard at work this holiday season.
Hard at work. Excited to plan my wedding. Going to Sri Lanka for vacation soon.
Why? What's in Sri Lanka?
I don't know. I just bought a guidebook today, so I'm going to figure that out. Mm-hmm. But I think there's beaches. But I think they're also having some kind of like government coup. If anybody knows anything about that, they should Instagram or Twitter.
Are you worried? Are you worried about them being there while there's a coup?
I don't think so. I'm hoping it's going to be cheaper. But we'll see.
Do they just slash the prices during the coup, or is it because of the looting that you're able to just get by cheaper?
We'd have to ask Sandra. I think she's the expert on that.
if Coupon Divas Facebook group has any travel things, yeah, that would be good. Did you guys stock up on the Tide Pods after she had all those tips?
No, but my fiance is just as bad as Sandra. It's terrible.
And the coupons.
Oh my God. We were moving out of his apartment and I literally came across a box that was labeled sewing kits and it had like 30 hotel sewing kits in it.
Yeah, those are hard to come by.
Anyway, I shouldn't say more. Okay. Maybe we won't get to this part of the point podcast. We give up at this point.
Okay, well, hopefully you guys are fast asleep by the time this part comes up. All right. Sophie, all the best. Anything you want to tell people too? I know your Twitter is private now.
Oh, I know. Got to follow
me. I would tell people that to try to follow Sophie if you can.
Yeah. Give it a shot. See
if you get through the defenses. What about Instagram? Is your Instagram private too?
Nope, my Instagram's public. Follow me on Instagram. Send some likes.
All right, sounds good. Sophie, thank you so much for coming on and doing this. You know, Thanksgiving weekend last year we talked also.
Oh, well, it's nice to spend the holiday with friends.
It is nice. It is nice. And I thought we had one of our best chats ever today.
Oh, good. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. All right. Well, you have enjoy the rest of your weekend and then talk to you soon. Okay.
Talk to you later.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Sophie Clark back here on the podcast. Really fun chat with Sophie today. Really feel like we sort of just crystallized the entire Survivor jury process at the final three. So glad that we got that all figured out for everybody and see what people could do with that in the future. Okay. So here's where we're going to go from here. So I didn't have my ducks in a row in terms of having my Survivor social media ready when Sophie was on the line. So if it's okay with you guys, I figure, you know, I don't want to not do it. And then people say like, hey, how come we didn't get to the Survivor social media? So let's go ahead and let me give it a shot solo today.
Tweets, baby tweets, Survivor tweets. I heard Bro Chacho Inc. was getting sued by Terry Deets. Tweets.
All right. Thank you, DJ LaBelle Klein, for that. And let me get into just some of the highlights. You know, I was thinking about skipping it, and then I was reading through it, and then there was some good ones from this week. So Carl ended up tweeting. Carl's got an interesting Twitter handle. It's CEEZS at C's. That's Carl on Twitter. He said, for those of you who had no faith in me playing the nullifier correctly, well, just okay. I won't say it. And then Dan responded, when I started watching and saw you got it on Exile, I just knew it was going to get my ass. Damn, Carl, you're the real MVP. Let's go have a beer. Dan knew instantly that was coming for him. He could tell. He knew it. All right. Davey Rickenbacker tweeted, I tweet Davey. Happy Thanksgiving from my dysfunctional family to yours. Eat like you haven't had a home-cooked meal in 39 days, but keep your eyes open for that advantage. And Allison replied, merge feast greater than Thanksgiving dinner. No shade to my mom and sister-in-law, but I haven't been starving for 19 days. Merge feast better than Thanksgiving dinner. It's a hot take, but I'm here for it. Look, I think, look... they can't screw up the merge feast. Can't screw up the merge feast. Okay, people have had some bad Thanksgivings. Merge feast. Nobody's like, the merge feast was not great. Always a hit. The merge feast. Let me take one from T-Bird. T-Bird had a lot of tweets this week, tweeting about everything. But I'll go with the one that she said. Carl, I had no idea you would execute the plan perfectly. Did I mention who my winner pick was for this season? Yeah. T-Bird, she's loving Carl. T-Bird had faith that Carl was going to use the idol nullifier correctly. Coach tweeted out, these Davids just can't keep their mouth shut. Reminds me of Tyson voting himself off Heroes versus Villains. Why does Coach got to go and bring that up? I thought that he's supposed to be best friends with Tyson. That was a little shady from Coach. Have you guys seen the videos that are on CBS? And I watch a ton of this stuff that's on CBS.com. But they do a weird new feature every single week. And it's called, and I referenced it when I was talking with Hannah about the Survivor shadiness. And so they do like, they have like a shade counter and they like play things and then they count how many times people are throwing shade at each other. But it's weird that the way that they do it. And it's like sort of like a ding for Survivor shade counter. So I don't know. I'd like to somehow do something with that on the podcast, but it's not so much an audio thing. It's kind of like I feel like it's a little more visual, but they're bizarre. If anybody is I'm not sure who's green lighting that and like, okay, this will be great. People will count the Survivor shade moments on each episode. The Purple Pants Badass, Bryce Isaiah. We'll talk to him soon. He said, if at the real Morrison ever wants to rest, I think that's short for wrestle, I'm ready. That's not shade. And I wish that I could be as excited about anything as Alexis Maxwell is tweeting out Survivor. She tweeted out, all caps, extra vote. She also said, I can predict nothing right now. All caps tweet, my family is screaming on the top of our lungs right now. She tweeted, I'm standing up right now. OMG. And like 5 G's. All caps, epic. And then some Alexis Maxwell shade. She said, TG. I'm not sure TG. What is TG short for? TG, this season is good. After whatever last season was, am I right? So that's some Survivor shade towards Survivor Ghost Island. What is TG? What is TG? Not everybody let me know. Just like, let's pick one or two people to let me know what TG is on Twitter. Then PG tweeted, is anyone else surprised that suddenly Mike White is standing so hard for the Goliaths? Yeah, why is Mike White standing so hard for the Goliaths? It's a good question. And Mish Fitz tweeted out, apparently, I should be live tweeting this episode, so just let me leave you with this. The Davids are the cutest alliance of all time. Why? Who's guilting Michelle Fitzgerald that she should be live tweeting the episode? And who's on her case? I hope it's not the mayo jar. But let Michelle live her life, everybody. Don't be insisting that she has to live tweet the episode, all right? It was Thanksgiving week. Let her be with her family. Don't be trying to tell her she's got to live tweet the episodes, people. And then let me go to Millennials versus Gen X portion of our Survivor social media, my favorite portion. Hannah said, there was lots of good Survivor resume talk. This was a good episode for my brother at Window to Wall. So Will Wall gets the shout out for resumes and pendulums. Those are the two big things that Will Wall gets the shout out for. And then finally, Brett LaBelle tweeted it. This just in, Survivor nullifies idols but keeps horrible Fiji pizza. At Survivor CBS. Hashtag David versus Goliath. Hashtag breaking news. Hashtag season 37. Hashtag the crying game. I've got a couple of Ghost Island tweets. Don't tell Alexis Maxwell. Okay. Then a couple of Ghost Island from the Ghost Island department. Kellen Bechtold at KS Bechto. She said, hot take. At Alec Merlino is the hottest Survivor strategist ever. Hashtag Survivor David versus Goliath. Wow. I feel like that there could be room for debate on a couple of fronts. Alec Merlino, hottest Survivor strategist ever. And then Wendell Holland, who did a great on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, at Wendell Holland tweeted out, what a freaking episode, best season ever. Don't at me. So I don't know if now the best season ever, don't at me, if Josh Wiggler has officially turned that into a meme, or if that is now just that a lot of people are arriving at the same thing. We will ask Josh when we get to the Wiggle Room. I'll get into what's coming up on the podcast this week on this special double episode week of Survivor coming up. First, let me thank one of our sponsors, and those are friends over at betonline.ag, the people behind the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge, and we'll see how things shake out from the football action in week 12. I'll tell you what my picks are. I went with the Ravens, the Colts, the Patriots against my own Jets, the Steelers, and my lock of the week was the Chargers taking on the Arizona Cardinals. So much great action going on in the NFL, and the place to get in on all of it is betonline.ag. Had a lot of great games from Thanksgiving week, a ton of great football action, of course, college football matchups as well, like Michigan versus Ohio State, Washington versus Washington State, Florida versus Florida State, Notre Dame at USC. So many great moments from the weekend of college football. There's only one place to get in on all of the action. That's betonline.ag. Don't wait any longer. Use promo code podcast1 to receive that 50% sign-up bonus. That's podcast1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Go online or use your mobile phone to sign up today and try in-game live betting where you can participate with all the action with every single play. betonline.ag, your online sportsbook expert. So, we've got a great week coming up on the podcast once again. We're not quite done with episode number 9. We've got the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. I will talk with Josh Wiggler and get into everything from the wand off for episode number 9. So really looking forward to that. Of course, News AF coming Tuesday. And then the double episode of Survivor is this week. So be sure to make your plans accordingly, because then Stephen Fishback and I will be live at 10:15 p.m. Eastern time after the episode to break down everything from episodes. I'm not sure if they're going to call this episode 10 and 11 or a supersized episode 10 of Survivor. Everybody in the Survivor media has to get on the same page with that one. On the recap next week, on Thursday, I'm going to be speaking with, and I'm talking to so many winners of Survivor, and I'm going to be talking with the winner of Survivor China. Todd Herzog is going to be back with me to break down everything from the double episode of Survivor. We'll get his take on all of that. And then next weekend on the Feedback Show, I'm going to have with me in studio Rourke Luskin, who did the Feedback Show with me in the studio last season. We had a lot of fun, so she's coming back for that. So we'll have that, and then of course plenty to talk about in the double episode of the Wiggle Room next weekend as well. So having a ton of fun with this Survivor season. I'm getting a lot of great feedback on the show, so happy to hear you guys are enjoying it as well. Of course, we could not do any of it without the patrons of Rob is a Podcast. For more information on why it's beneficiary to be a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, to be a part of our Rob Has a Podcast patron community, check out robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information. Thank you guys so much. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.
Oh.
I'll do a commentary on what I see in Rob's room. He has a very fancy camera system that has like a zoom in on his face, so you can't really see what's behind it. But I see a lot of photographs, one of Jeff Probst, one of, I think it's Sue Hawk. I hope it's Sue Hawk. I like Sue Hawk. A bobblehead of himself, a trophy with a frog on top,